Shotgun. Marino throws deep downfield. It is caught by Fryer. Yes! Touchdown! Touchdown, Dolphins!
With in-depth analysis on the Miami Dolphins.
The Rangers call! That's on 4th and 5!
Live from the DolphinsTalk.com studios.
In my opinion, the greatest fans in the NFL, Miami Dolphin fans.
DolphinsTalk.com daily.
All right, Miami! Good afternoon, everybody. How are you today? And thank you for listening to DolphinsTalk.com Daily, the most listened to daily Miami Dolphins podcast on the internet. I am your host, Mike, and we are broadcasting live from the DolphinsTalk.com studios on this Monday, April the 16th. And we got a big show for you today. Later on in the podcast, I will be joined by Ian Wharton from Bleacher Report. He is an NFL analyst for Bleacher Report, and we will talk about the upcoming 2018 draft, who Miami is linked to, break down some of the prospects that have been rumored to go to Miami, and talk about all sorts of stuff like that. So Ian Wharton will be joining me later on in the podcast. But before we get to that, there is actually a bunch of news to talk about in the world of the Miami Dolphins. So let's get right to it. First and foremost, today was the first day of the Miami Dolphins off-season workout program. Pretty much in these first few days, it's pretty much just a strength and conditioning aspect. But everyone on the roster who is under contract was there today in the facility and participating in the off-season workout program, including quarterback Ryan Tannehill. There was some shots online actually put out by the Miami Dolphins showing Ryan Tannehill walking into the building. So he was there today working out with the team. And you know, it's the start. It's pretty much the start of the 2018 season. Now, these guys aren't going to be in pads. They won't be out there running any drills. It's pretty much just weight room stuff. But this is the first day of the 2018 season, for lack of a better words. And everyone was there today. Everyone reported and was working out. In other news, the Miami Dolphins made a signing today. They signed tight end Gavin Escobar. Escobar, best known for his time with the Cowboys, but he really didn't even play last year. I think he only suited up for 2 games with the Ravens, and he was cut by a bunch of teams last year. This is not a big signing. This is just a training camp body. This is someone who will come in and fight for a spot, just as well as Marquise Gray and A.J. Derby. He's in that range. He's not here to replace Julius Thomas. He's not here to replace Anthony Fasano. He's here to fight for a job, either the second or third tight end job in training camp. This does not affect what the Miami Dolphins will do with tight end in this draft. As I've been saying for weeks, they are heading into this draft needing at least one tight end, most likely two. But Escobar, he probably signed for next to nothing. He's only 27 years old. He's a former second-round pick. In his time with the Cowboys, you know, he was okay. He was okay. 2016, last year he actually played in the league. 16 games, he started one. He caught only 4 passes and one was a touchdown. So really not much production out of him. Last year in 2017, he bounced around. 2017, he signed with the Chiefs. Then he was released, signed with the Ravens. Then he was released, signed with the Browns. Then he was released. He just bounced around from team to team. He only suited up for 2 games with the Ravens. So is what it is. Not a big signing in any way. In other news, and this is more something to keep an eye on, because there was that report a couple weeks back that the Miami Dolphins were talking with the Broncos in March about possibly, maybe considering a trade of Juwan James for C.J. Anderson. Obviously, it didn't happen. But today, the Denver Broncos released C.J. Anderson, and he is on the open market. So, C.J. Anderson right now could be had if the Miami Dolphins want him. And as we've known, pretty much since Adam Gase has arrived in Miami, they have wanted to sign him. And in fact, they did sign him. In early 2016, C.J. Anderson did sign with the Miami Dolphins a 4-year, $18 million contract. However, it was matched by the Broncos, so they held on to his rights as he was a restricted free agent at the time. And like I said, there was obviously talk of the trade. That didn't happen. Well, now he's on the open market. And all it takes, if they want him in Miami, is to pay him money. And they don't have to part with nothing. He's no longer restricted. And if the Miami Dolphins want him, they just have to pay him money. And in my opinion, they should. Because this is the type of guy the Miami Dolphins need in their backfield. And I know what a lot of you right now are saying as you're yelling at your smartphone, yelling at your laptop, as you're listening to me right now, is we just signed Frank Gore. We don't need another veteran running back. To which I say, wrong, wrong, wrong. And here's why it's wrong. Frank Gore. Everyone loves Frank Gore. He's going to Canton Hall of Fame player. Nobody's knocking Frank Gore. But Frank Gore will be 35 years old in about three weeks or so. He is old, okay? And I know he had a pretty good year last year in 2017. Nobody's taking that away from Frank Gore. But Frank Gore is still old. He's very old. And at running back in this league, 35, you can say, is ancient. And, well, I don't think he's totally washed up and all that stuff. I do think you do have to prepare yourself when you show up in August to training camp that there's a possibility that Frank Gore, who was 35 years old, last year was his last great year. You have to be prepared for that because in this league, guys, you know, at a certain point fall off the cliff and they lose it, and it happens fast. I'm not saying that will happen to Frank Gore. I'm saying it's a possibility. So with that in mind, plus you keep in mind Kenyon Drake, you know, he had 5 very good games at the end of last year. But those are the only 5 good games he's had in his life as a number one running back in the NFL. That's not a knock. It's just a fact. So Drake, we haven't seen him be a number one lead back for an extended period of time. Frank Gore, 35 years old, a lot of risk there. How do you mitigate that risk? You bring in a guy who's been a number one lead back in the NFL before. C.J. Anderson's that guy. And I know some people say, well, C.J. Anderson's old too. No, he's not. C.J. Anderson just turned 27 years old in February. 27 years old, even for a running back, is young. Okay? He's not that old. That's number one. Number two, he wasn't released by the Broncos because of his play. In fact, quite the opposite. Last year, C.J. Anderson, he played in all 16 games. He started all 16 games, ran for over 1,000 yards, and he caught, I think it was around 29 receptions, 28 receptions. So he had the best year of his career just last year. Okay? So he's a younger guy coming off the best year of his career. He knows the Miami Dolphins staff. He knows Adam Gase, played for him before. The new Miami Dolphins running back coach, Eric Studersville, he's played with him before, clearly, in Denver. And in fact, when the Broncos fired him this past January, C.J. Anderson was very vocal, saying it was a mistake and they should not have fired their running backs coach. Well, that coach who he went out for and put his name to it in the media saying it was a mistake is now in Miami. So we'll see. Again, there's a lot of risk right now with the Miami Dolphins and running back. And I know a lot of fans and a lot of people in the media are saying, but they should get younger. They should get a guy in the draft. I get it. Two things. Number one, you can still get a guy in the draft if you want. Just because you sign C.J. Anderson and have now C.J. Anderson, Frank Gore, and Kenyon Drake, you can still add a fourth running back in the draft. Whatever round you want to add him in, whether it's round 3 or 2 or 6, whatever, you can still do that. You can carry 4 running backs on your team. It's not the end of the world. That's number one. Number two, what this does if they do sign him to, heading into this draft, the Miami Dolphins have a ton of needs. We all know what they are. Linebacker, they might have to come out of this draft with 2 linebackers, not even 1. Tight end, same thing. They might need to come out of this draft with 2 tight ends, not 1. Quarterback, you would like to see him add 1 at some point in this draft. Defensive tackle, like to see him add 1 there. Offensive lineman, would like to see him. They have a ton of needs. If you can, short term at least, for 2018, lock up your running back room with C.J. Anderson, Frank Gore, and Kenyon Drake, you can kick the can down the road at running back. Where you can say, you know what, we'd like to add someone younger right now. But for 2018, we're probably okay with these 3 guys. And we'll worry about running back in the 2019 draft. Let me pick up that second linebacker in this draft. Let me pick up that second tight end in this draft. Let me pick up a quarterback in this draft. It gives the Miami Dolphins draft flexibility. You're not going to fill every need they have in one draft. Let's remove one of the needs now as we head into the draft next week. And that's what signing C.J. Anderson does. And for those of you saying, well, you got to have a running back on your roster that plays special teams, timeout. Timeout. Special teams is important, no doubt. But I am not worried if one of those three running backs can run down a punt or a kickoff. Okay? I can find an extra safety to do that. I can find an extra linebacker to do that. I can find an extra wide receiver to do that. I'm not going to mess up my running back room because Frank Gore, C.J. Anderson, and Kenyon Drake aren't going to run down a punt. Sorry, just not. And that shouldn't even come into a factor here. Shouldn't come into a factor here whether the Miami Dolphins should or should not sign him. A couple national reports. It was reported this afternoon by Pat Kerwin on Sirius XM NFL Radio, who's very well connected in this league. He said he fully expects C.J. Anderson to sign with Miami. That's where he just expects. He thinks it just will happen, as a matter of fact. And I know Adam Schefter earlier today reported, as soon as he was cut, that about five teams reached out to C.J. Anderson and his agent instantaneously. So he's got a little bit of a market here, which that is pretty much the only thing that can hurt the Miami Dolphins, is that right now they do not have a lot of salary cap space. I believe today they were at or around $3.4 million, which is not a lot. We know June 1st they get $17 million more, but that's a long ways away, June 1st. But they don't have a lot as of today. Again, you can make space very easily in the NFL. They could extend Wake and make some salary cap space there. They could redo a deal with Robert Quinn and open up space there. There's a million ways they could make space and get more money under the cap. So that's not even an issue either. It's just about, do the Miami Dolphins want to add C.J. Anderson to their roster? I think they should. I think it's a no-brainer. I think he helps the offense immensely. Because like I said, you don't know with Frank Gore. He's 35 years old, folks. And we all love him. It's a great story. He's a local guy who's going to the Hall of Fame. He's here for his last year in the NFL to play with his hometown team. It's a great story. But you got to take emotion out of it. You got to take emotion out of it. And you got to make the best move for the roster in 2018. C.J. Anderson's much younger, he was much more productive last year. And he's a guy who, if you pair with Kenyon Drake, you know, for 1 or 2 years, that's a nice little 1-2 punch. That's a nice little 1-2 punch you'll have. And you still got Frank Gore on the roster, and it does give Miami draft flexibility. So we'll see what happens here with C.J. Anderson. We'll see what happens. I'm not sure if he will sign with a team before the draft. I think it's in his best interest to do that, in that, you know, you don't want a whole bunch of teams that might be interested in you to add running backs next week in the draft. And then after the draft, you're like, yeah, we really don't need to pay you anymore because we drafted this guy. He's going to want to find a home before the draft. And I think if you're the Miami Dolphins, it's a good fit. It's a good marriage. And like I said, he's not going to break the bank. He wasn't cut because he wasn't productive. He was cut because of his contract. He was making too much money. And I think if you give him a fair deal over 2 years, you know, I think he'll sign with Miami. And I think it will probably happen. Last story I want to talk about before we get to Ian Wharton from Bleacher Report is Mike Pouncey today met with the media in Los Angeles because it was the first day for their off-season workout program as well. And he had some interesting comments. Pretty much the long and short of it is, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this, Mike Pouncey is not happy in the least with the way he was released by the Miami Dolphins. Essentially, he said the Miami Dolphins sent a text message to his agent, and they let the agent know that he was being released. And when Mike Pouncey then tried to reach out to some people in the Miami Dolphins, he made some phone calls, he was sending some text messages, they were ignored. And Mike Pouncey felt, for being in Miami, what was it, 7 years or 9 years, I can't remember that, he felt he deserved a little bit better, and they could have at least have at least spoken to him on his way out, which that's fair, I guess. But one thing I'll say, when NFL players are free agents and they sign with whoever for way more money and they get the big money deals, they always are the first ones to say, well, it's a business. I got to take care of me and my family. I had to do it. It's a business. And when an NFL team releases someone, they always say, it's a business. We had to do it. We like the guy, but it's a business. We have to move on and go in a different direction. So each side says this, but in circumstances like this, there's always one side, and sometimes it's the side of the team, sometimes it's the side of the player, mostly it's the side of the player, that forgets it's a business. And you can say it's a business, but then you can't be upset when a team treats it like a business. They let go of Mike Pouncey. They contacted his agent to let his agent know he was being released. I mean, did Mike Pouncey want a red... What did he want? Did he expect the Miami Dolphins to hold a ceremony? You know, Mike Pouncey's being released. One of the all-time great, you know, guys in Miami Dolphins. What did he expect? Now, should they have responded to one of his text messages or phone calls? Yeah, I guess maybe that would have been a little bit more classy. But it's like, I don't know. Guys get cut in this league all the time. And I don't think any of them are owed anything. When you sign up to be an NFL player, you know what you're getting into. If you want the fame and the big money, you know, on the flip side, there might be a day and time that you will be cut or released. No, not one player does not know that when they sign up to be an NFL player. Mike Pouncey signed to be an NFL player. Got paid very handsomely. First round pick. He was released. What did you want the Miami Dolphins to do? If they talked to you on that day, sorry, Mike, we had to let you go. What else did you want them to say? They wanted to go in a different direction. And Mike Pouncey is saying this is going to add fuel to the fire. Pretty much he felt disrespected. That's fine. If that's what it takes for him at this point in his career to get motivated and play well, to have a little chip on his shoulder, fine. Good for him. But, you know, when you hear stuff all the time from players and teams, it's a business. Well, remember, it's a business. And stuff like this happens because it's a business. So Mike Pouncey, not happy with the Miami Dolphins, to say the least. So there's that. Now, I had a few moments today to chat with Ian Wharton of Bleacher Report. He's an NFL analyst for Bleacher Report. He also is heavy into the NFL draft, and he scouts all these players and watches a lot of film on them and such. So it's a great spot. Everyone, sit back and enjoy my chat with Ian Wharton from Bleacher Report. I am joined on the podcast tonight by Ian Wharton of Bleacher Report. Ian, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. Thanks so much for having me on.
Yes, absolutely. Now, you put out a new book where you break down a lot of cornerbacks and stuff. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that book you just released?
Yeah, so I did an in-depth study throughout the year. It's something that I've kind of been working on for a couple of years, at least as far as refining the process of just kind of isolating cornerback play, especially in man coverage, looking at press man and off man alignments. Because really the position in itself, we don't really have many ways to kind of judge it. Like even from a TV broadcast angle on Sundays, we're limited in what we see. We just see if guys are targeted or we just see like the end of plays, whereas really what leads up to that end of the play is to me very important. And it has been important to some of the staffs I've worked with over the years. And so I tried to kind of bring that together over the last couple of years and this year really focus and look at every single corner who received significant playing time throughout the year. And so it ended up being over 100 cornerbacks that I charted every single route for in man coverage, their alignment, and then also kind of looked at a subjective measure in addition to the charting statistics and looked at it as like, are they staying within one arm's length of the receiver? And if they are, that's a successful coverage based off of the staffs that I've worked with and kind of how they look and deem it plays. And while it's never a positive to give up a reception, it is a positive process to at least be close to the receiver and force them to adjust at the catch point. And so this book is really all about that. I kind of give the objective stats. I give some of the subjective stats, and I also give about a page or two for pretty much every corner in the book, just kind of as like a scouting report and kind of explaining some of the numbers and how I feel about some of the numbers. Sometimes I don't always agree with it, and it's not meant to be an end-all be-all, but it's meant to be an evaluation tool to kind of help us look at the position a little bit differently and think a little bit more critically beyond the stat box.
Yeah, absolutely. And that sounds amazing. I can't wait to get my hands on this. I will be reading this for sure. And we will put a link up on our website where people can go and purchase this book online, because it does sound like it's just great reading for anybody who loves the sport of football to sort of learn more about that one spot and that one position on the field. So we will have a link to buy this book up on our site as well. So let's talk about the 2018 draft, which is about a week away, as I know you do watch a lot of these guys and break them down. And a few spots the Miami Dolphins will be looking at are, of course, linebacker, tight end, and quarterback. So we're going to jump into those. Let's start off with the linebackers first. In your is this 2018 class, how would you consider this linebacker class in 2018? Is this a weak class, or is this one that has a lot of quality linebackers in it?
I think it's a terrific class at the top, and then it very quickly kind of drops, and I'm not really sure that there's going to be impact starters or even quality starters outside of those top couple household names that we're used to. Roquan Smith, Tremaine Edmonds, and Van Der Esch from Boise State. Those, Leighton Van Der Esch, he is kind of like that third guy where you look at him and you say, after this, is there really a stud? Is there really a guy that you can count on and be a three down player consistently? I don't know that there is, but the top end talent, and that could potentially greatly help Miami sitting at number 11, because generally linebackers that don't rush the passer extremely well don't go that high. But this might be one of those unique classes where, because of the quarterbacks, you're going to see them kind of be second in line, because there's not, you have the one great running back in Saquon Barkley. You've got no great receivers, or at least as far as being a prospect, being a great prospect. You don't really have a superstar tight end, not a lot of great offensive linemen. So that's kind of the recipe for like these guys that are studs at linebacker to really be pushed up. And Miami could benefit because of the so many quarterbacks going in front of them. They may be able to land a real impact player finally.
Yeah, absolutely. And between Smith and Edmonds, I know one is more of a middle linebacker, one's more of an outside linebacker. Is there one you rank a little bit higher than the other, or are they pretty close to being where you would rank them?
Yeah, so like they're kind of a fun comparison because they're so different, and like it kind of goes back to what you see versus what you project. And to me, Roquan Smith is the number two or three player in this draft. I don't think there are many impact players like him. He is the rare off-ball linebacker that I think is a true playmaker and difference maker at the position. A lot of people loved Reuben Foster last year. I think he's Reuben Foster without the off-field issues. And I think he's even a little bit more athletic. So, you know, that is a heck of a compliment, because Foster was an amazing prospect as well. Looking at Edmonds, it's for him, it's about his development. He obviously has the prototype size. He has the look. He's so young. He's only 19 years old. Roquan Smith is only 21, so it's not like youth is against him. But Roquan is definitely the finished product. And I think Edmonds, if you're looking at maybe a guy with, you know, bigger tools, he's a little bit, maybe a higher upside just because of his size and his freakish ability to move at that size. You know, you could sell me on that. I just think that in today's age, it really is great if you can get two stellar years out of a rookie. And I think that Edmonds is a guy that might take those first 2 years as developmental steps, whereas Roquan's going to come in immediately and probably be like a defensive player of the year candidate as a rookie, at least a rookie defensive player of the year. You know, and so to me, there's better value in that, but, you know, I'm not going to lie. I mean, Edmonds is still extremely tempting. I mean, I don't think anyone's going to be complaining about taking him that high, because Hassan Reddick was a guy a year ago that was less toolsy than he was and less natural at the position, was actually a converted position player, and he went in the first round. which is kind of crazy because Edmonds is a lot more natural and obviously much more gifted physically.
Absolutely. And you mentioned before Leighton Van Der Esch. And last year in college in 2017, he had a big year. He really broke out onto the scene. But you could also look at that one other way and say, was he a bit of a one-year wonder in college? I've seen him going anywhere from middle of round one to middle of round two. What are your thoughts on Leighton Van Der Esch? And is he someone who should be selected in the first round, you think?
Yeah, I do lean that way, especially because the class is how it is. It's just a very unique set of circumstances because of that. Van Der Esch, to me, you know, you mentioned it, he's a one-year guy, so there are positives and negatives to that. The positive, though, is that he is incredibly physical. He is a great finisher at the point of contact. He does an extremely good job of avoiding blocks and getting to the ball carrier. He doesn't do a great job of the nuance at the position. He doesn't do a great job of kind of getting off of tackles and actually becoming more consistent and being able to break down plays mentally. But that's also a side effect of a guy being inexperienced. And so I think that that's something that's difficult to project and bank on. But if he can get there, then you're really looking at like a star at the position. So it's like everything else checks the boxes. And then I think it really going to come down to the whiteboard. Did he do well in interviews? Do we do well as far as his medicals? If everything checks out on that frame, then I think he's definitely a first round pick. I agree with you. I think like that middle of the first round is where you're going to start seeing his name pop up. Shortly after Miami, even just because this is going to be a class where like there's a drop after the first several players. And then unlike last year, it was pretty deep. It went down to like the 20s and then there was a drop in talent. This year, it's like the middle of that first round. So shortly after Miami, I think there's another drop in talent and you're not going to see many first round caliber players. I think Van Der Esch, you know, I gave him a second round grade personally because of that inexperience, because of the lack of refinement. But there's no doubt about it that he has a huge upside. And if he ends up realizing that, then I'm going to be way too low on him.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, because I thought last year's draft overall was very, very strong overall. This year, I don't get quite that feeling. But at a couple spots, I think it is. And one of those spots, let's talk about next, is tight end. I love this class for tight ends. What are your thoughts on the tight end class as a group and who really is your number one guy in this class?
Yeah, I agree. It's very deep. There's a lot of guys here that are excellent receivers. They are pretty good athletes. It projects very well, especially as we see guys like Trey Burton getting paid in free agency with a limited kind of resume to work off of. There's a bunch of guys that are kind of going to come into the league, have a similar experience, probably come in as number two guys. And if they can get into the right situation and get the right targets, they could be the next Trey Burton. For me, Mike Gesicki is my top tight end. I just have a couple of questions on Dallas Goedert and guys like that, just because he didn't do a lot of the athletic testing. Whereas Gesicki, I still have questions about him, but to me, he's that guy that is really a receiver playing tight end. He has that amazing size. I'm not worried about his blocking ability too much. I just don't think there's really a huge role for tight ends blocking. And I think that's not something that'll – yeah, I don't think a lot of guys really get coached that way in college anymore, or at least like these impact receivers. Like Mark Andrews is the same way out of Oklahoma. Like there's no chance that they were going to have him blocking too often. He's too good of a receiver and too much of a threat to do that. I think Ian Thomas, another guy from Indiana, like these are all names that are, I think, late – well, Gesicki might be late round one type, but I think you'll probably see him go early in that second round. And I think like probably by Miami's second round pick, he'll be gone. And then quickly you'll see guys like Goedert, Ian Thomas, Mark Andrews, I think will probably be late second round, maybe early third round. I don't know that he has the upper echelon athleticism and kind of leaping ability that you really look for, but that being said, I think you could do a lot worse than getting a player like that in the third round, especially compared to years past. I mean, this is a deep tight end class, like I mentioned, because of the guys that can come in and impact right away. And usually tight end's a position that can, you know, take a few years. And that would be my only hang up on another guy that we've seen linked to Miami quite recently a lot, which is Hayden Hurst out of South Carolina. He's like another receiver type tight end. He's explosive. I really like what he puts on tape. I just At 25 years old, I really worry because tight ends tend to start slow and then they tend to break down early. So if he's already coming in at 25, let's say it even takes him till 2019 to really become more of an impact player. At 26, if he starts breaking down at 29, you really only got a rookie contract out of him, which is fine in like the third round. But if you're taking him before the third round, you know, that's really not ideal. And we've just seen it with too many tight ends. I mean, even Gronk, Gary Barnage in recent years, Dennis Pitta is another guy. So it's like guys like that, they take such a physical toll on their bodies that it's difficult to kind of take it with too much confidence unless if they're a younger player. So that would be my only hang up with Hurst, but he's definitely a good talent.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was my next question about his age. So you answered that for me. I'm the kid from South Dakota State, Goodart. I've seen him once again. Some people have him round one. Does the fact that he's coming from a small school, which I know a lot of guys have come from small schools and have played fine in the NFL, is that though a red flag you always see with someone who is out of South Dakota State?
Yeah, it is. And we saw it last year with Adam Shaheen out of Ashland University. So even my alma mater, actually. But even smaller school. And even though these guys look dominant on tape, which is great, that's how they become NFL prospects. You have to dominate that competition. Like, unless if you're running away from these guys and just looking like a monster, kind of like Ali Marpet did a few years ago as an offensive lineman out of Hobart, like, you really have to dominate that competition. And he did, but he was never a guy that was running away. Like, Shaheen was a bigger dude, too, but he was running away from competition, and he just looked like he was, you know, I think he ended up running like a low 4.8, which isn't amazing, but at his size, it was very impressive. And so Goddard did not run. And to me, he looked on tape like a 5.0 40 type of guy. And like him not running kind of said, okay, he might actually just be super slow. So it's definitely a red flag. That's where like the athleticism and the testing has to come into play, because you have to confirm what you see on tape. And we were never able to confirm what we saw on tape. And so that's going to be a big knock against him, I think. But if he's athletic enough to create even some separation, he was extremely impressive. And if he was able to run, you know, even like that 4.8 and slightly below range, I think he would have probably vaulted himself and kind of locked himself into like that top 45 range with Gesicki.
Yeah. Yeah. And like you said, I love this class. I think Miami, if they want to go tight end with pick 42 or pick even 73, I think they'll be fine, because there's a lot of guys in this class at tight end. And that is a spot of need for the Miami Dolphins. The last spot I will talk to you about is the quarterbacks. Because of course, when you talk about the Miami Dolphins, you're always talking about the quarterbacks. out of the big four of Sam Darnold, Josh Rosen, Josh Allen, and Baker Mayfield, which one is atop your list there? And will any of those four, will they be on the board come pick 5 or 6, you think? Or will they all just fly off the board at the top of this draft?
So Rosen's my top guy. Now that's just going off of film, not having more access to these guys. I just think what he does is very easily projectable to the NFL. He does it at a high level. There's definitely risks with him. I'd be worried a little bit about his injury history. I'd be a little bit worried about his ability to throw deep. He's not really that adequate of a deep thrower. No one in this class really is outside of Josh Allen. And even beyond the top guys that we mentioned, they're all kind of questionable in that range. But Rosen is a guy, otherwise, is a pretty clean prospect. He throws some bad interceptions sometimes, but I don't try to hold that too much against guys, because he was also having to put up like 50 points a game. And I think that like if he has some mediocre defense, even at the next level, he might not be that player. I really favor him to like Matt Ryan. And I think that he can kind of swing between Matt Ryan and Eli Manning sometimes, because there's not really a huge difference, but sometimes it's like the bad turnover that makes him look a little bit more like Eli Manning. But I mean, at the worst though, you're still getting a franchise quarterback, I think, as long as he can stay healthy. I can definitely sell you on the other guys as well. But Rosen, to me, it's easy to see what he does well. And he's so good at intermediate passing. I just can't imagine him busting if for non-health reasons. Like he's so smart. He's so quick. He's so, he's so consistent, I think, at reading things pre-snap that when he does make mistakes, he doesn't often make them again. And if he does, it's not usually because of, I don't think mental mistakes. I think sometimes it's more of just he had to make a play and he had pretty limited playmakers around him. So I think he's probably going to be the one that falls from what it sounds like. And I'm not really 100% sure why. I do think teams are a little bit leery because of his injuries, because of his personality. But really, I don't really care about that stuff. I mean, some of it's media driven and some of it is just football people being very rigid in their ways and very stuck in their ways. And so I don't think anyone's going to be there from that group at 11. Maybe once you start to hit like Indianapolis at 6, Chicago at 8, I think that's going to be maybe the sweet spot for a trade. Because I don't think the Giants are going to trade out of 2. So someone's going to fall, and the question is like, how
How
aggressive will
far?
other teams be? And I do think that those teams in the mid to late first round are going to be very aggressive, especially like Arizona, New England. I would watch those two teams specifically because I think they're going to be chomping at the bit if Rosen starts to fall, which should really tell you something because, Bruce Arians knows what he's doing at quarterback, and obviously Bill Belichick does too.
Yep, absolutely. That would be alarming if they feel the need to race up there and grab him should he start to fall just a bit. Now, after those four, I think you have Lamar Jackson sort of all by himself in that next grouping, which is just of one. What are your thoughts on him? Now, he will go in round one. I know some people think he won't. He will go in round one. And I did hear from Pat Kirwin on Sirius XM NFL Radio last week that he spoke to a handful of teams, and they have him ranked as the second best quarterback in this group. So there are some teams out there, how many, I don't know. He said a handful, who rank him very high. What are your thoughts on him as a player? And pretty much, what are your thoughts on Lamar Jackson?
Yeah, I love him. If I have time to sit him for a year, he would probably be my number two quarterback in this class as well. Just the upside is so high, and it's kind of similar to Rosen. I feel like the floor on him is also high because he's smart. He comes from an NFL system. He's used to making multiple reads in one play, and those are common knocks against him. But when you really watch him, there's no doubt about it. Like Bobby Petrino runs an NFL system. It's a modified West Coast system. It's very easily translatable to the next level. I mean, we don't even have to get into his running ability. Like what
No.
he does as a
Oh.
passer
Yeah.
is first round quality. And then you start to mix in his legs, and then it's like, yeah, it's pretty easy to see that this guy is super dynamic. Like he's going to be a stud if he's given time to kind of iron out some of his footwork and mechanical issues. But we saw that with Carson Wentz too. Like I think his issues are very similar to Wentz's, where it was just a matter of kind of refining that process. And even if he doesn't, he's still going to make those big plays enough to where you're going to stick with him for a while. So I love him. I think he's going to be in play probably earlier than what people expect.
I do too.
I think Miami should really give him, a thought because if the rest of the guys are off the board, it just kind of depends. Like, I mean, it's tough. Like the only guys I'd probably take over Lamar would be Quentin Nelson and Roquan Smith. If those guys are off the board, I would probably just take Lamar because of the unique situation to sit him for a year. I think Adam Gase would do really good things with him as far as making his process a little bit quicker and then making favorable matchups to make it even easier on him to have early success. So I don't know if they'll do that. I mean, I think Miami's been pretty split. There's been a lot of names linked to them, and I think that's partially intentional. Makes it very difficult to read what they
Yeah.
want to do. But I will not be surprised at all if you see, again, watch for a smart team here. Watch for New England. Watch for New Orleans has been like the big connection. Like pretty much the expectation is that like if he's there for New Orleans, he'll be taken there. And that's been the last couple of weeks that I've been hearing that. So yeah, he's definitely gonna go first round, like you said. It's just a matter of how high. And again, I wouldn't be surprised if it was like as early as Arizona or shortly after Miami.
Yeah, absolutely. And after that, there's sort of that next grouping of Mason Rudolph, Luke Falk, Mike White, Kyle Laietta. Does anybody there stand out for you of being someone to be like, hey, I like him a little bit more than the rest? Because to me, the kid from Washington State there, Falk, I like him a little bit more than the rest of those guys I just mentioned, just from what I've seen. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on that group?
Yeah, I don't know if there's anyone in that group that I would want as like a future starter. I think I'd be happy to take them as like a high-end backup. I actually see them each kind of similarly in that view. I probably would take the roll of the dice on Mason Rudolph if I had to pick one of them. There's things I like about Falk. What scares me about him is the concussion history. He took a lot of big shots in college too, and I don't know that he has the arm strength to really continue developing. And he's got to be he and Lauletta are like the same. Like they have to be perfect mentally to be able to succeed in the NFL because their arms are so limited. They're good enough to be an NFL player. I worry that they're going to be like David Fales, you know, where Fales just didn't even look like, you know, he could hit a fastball. Everything he's throwing is like a changeup. Guys can succeed with that, but I just don't know that I would, you know, take him second round, for example. I think maybe you're looking at like third or fourth round just as like a developmental backup. I do think Miami should take a quarterback like that. Maybe Mike White in like the fourth round, that would be ideal. Chase Litton, guy from Marshall, I could see Adam Gase really being drawn to him. He's another guy. He's kind of like a discount Josh Allen. He's not quite as big, but he has a really good arm. It's just his mechanics are just all over the place. He stares down his first read a lot, which is why he's a day three prospect. But the tools are there, and you could possibly see him become like at least a quality backup, maybe even like a Derek Anderson or something one day.
Yep. And the last guy I want to ask you about, just because I've heard things on him that are all over the map. I know some people who love him and some people who don't, is the quarterback out of Virginia, Kirk Benkert. What are your thoughts on him?
So I haven't been able to dig as deep in on him yet, just because I'm finishing the Memphis quarterback now, and then I'll be going on to Benkert. From what I've seen in the limited viewings, I think he's kind of in that mix with like Mike White, whereas he's like kind of like a fourth, fifth, sixth rounder.
Yeah.
There's definitely value to his game as a backup. I don't know that he's ever going to stand out as more than, you know, like a solid guy for what he is. Miami needs that, but you know, it kind of depends on what happens early on and how much they prioritize finding Tannehill's replacement. Cause I don't think he's going to be a Tannehill replacement. I think he's more of a kind of like Brandon Doughty was, where he's just a guy to, you know, you're hoping to be a really good value over the next couple of years. So you don't have to pay a Matt Moore, you know, $3-5 million to be a backup.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thanks so much for your time tonight, Ian, and everyone follow you and follow him on Twitter at NFL Film Study. And like I said, I will put a link up on our site to go and buy his new book that is out. Ian, thanks so much. And I'm sure we'll have you on again down the road.
Thanks, Mike. It's my pleasure.
All right. You have a good night.
You too. Thank you.
Once again, I would like to thank Ian Wharton from Bleacher Report for joining me tonight on the podcast. A lot of great information there. And be sure to follow him on Twitter at NFL Film Study, at NFL Film Study. So check Ian out there, and we'll have him on again probably after the draft to talk about some of the prospects Miami selected. So that's it for today's show. We'll have another show, we'll have another show for you tomorrow. Now, I know we were supposed to do a show this past weekend with Brett Legasse where we broke down the cornerbacks and safeties. Due to a scheduling conflict, I was unable to meet up with Brett to record that show. So we will do that show later this week or next weekend. It'll be prior to the draft, so we'll break down all the cornerbacks and safeties prior to the draft still. And on tomorrow's show, I will have a special announcement as well that you all want to hear, so be on the lookout for that. Follow me on Twitter at Dolphins Talk, at Dolphins Talk, and you can send me an email as well at DolphinsTalk1977@gmail.com. Again, that is DolphinsTalk1977@gmail.com. We got a bunch of new articles up on the website. Be sure to check them out. There's about four or five new articles, including a new mock draft as well by Bobby Melendez. So you're going to want to check out all of that on the website. And as always, be sure to follow the websites who re-air this podcast. They are Fin Fanatic, Fin Fever. They are Fin Fanatic.com, FinFever.com, TheGruelingTruth.net, and Dolphin-UK.com, as well as the Facebook pages that re-air this podcast. They are Dolphinatics and Fanatics, so check them out as well. They have a ton of great content up on their site as well. Everyone, have a great rest of your day, and we'll talk to you again after a while.
Thank you for listening to the DolphinsTalk.com podcast. Be sure to visit DolphinsTalk.com every day for all of your latest Miami Dolphins news.